Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It is with great pleasure that I say hello to Thomas O'Gorman. Tom, how are you?
Hey, Rick, I'm great. And I really enjoyed listening to that sleep apnea commercial. You know, I'm a patient of sleep apneas. I've got my machine and everything. It's rebuilt my life.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. I thought you were going to say...
It has rebuilt my respiratory system since March.
That's fantastic. I thought you were going to say, wow, Rick, it was great to listen to you read my columns. Tom is a columnist for...
I don't know what the confusion was.
Don't worry about it. We're together now. The week of for Inside Publications, Tom is the main columnist for that. Still ink on paper. I love the fact that it's ink on paper. And you've written two of the best columns that I've seen in the last 2 weeks. One, the August 7th to August 13th issue, is headlined, "Chicago is more than a political cause. It's a presidential destination. I wrote a similar kind of piece, not as detailed, frankly, as yours for the Tribune. Why the first real presidential convention was held here in 1860 and nominated a character named Abraham Lincoln. What made Chicago? I guess the obvious.
Imagine this. Chicago was only founded as a town in 1833.
Yep.
And then 4 years later, they incorporated as a city in 1837. 27 years later, they're inviting all the Republicans, which was a new party, to Chicago for the convention.
Yeah.
What does that tell you about Chicago? I mean, that it was fast growing. And by 1860, we had the largest and most beautiful railway station in the world, even better than Vienna and Berlin.
One of the other reasons that I think the conventional wisdom over the years was that, it was so centrally located and wonderfully located. I maintain, too, that it was because Chicago offered everything that a conventioneer would want. They had ample hotel rooms, but also ample ways for conventioners to, let's say, express their dark sides. Correct.
Well, yes, but also you got to imagine. You know, first of all, you know, Ogden, the first mayor, he was pretty fat. He was in 1837-38. In that short time frame, he got the canal started, and he got the railroad started. And so he still got 27 years going. And then it was really Long John Wentworth. You know, he was 6'8", weighed 380 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Long John Wentworth was a follower. You know, the Republicans only started in 1856.
Right.
So this is really their first big convention. And, you know, the nation was deeply divided over the issue of slavery, but the millions of small little pieces about that were just, you know, in fact, in 1860, no Southern state sent a delegation to that 1860 convention. However, it was also a time in which pretty fancy Republicans were putting themselves up to run, and this is what I see as the great gift and the liability sometimes of the conventions and that coming to a certain town, and that is the local boss and the local team of the boss's men.
Mm-hmm.
They really control everything, every single thing. And Long John Wentworth wanted Abraham Lincoln. A lot of people wanted Abraham Lincoln.
So did Tom. A very powerful guy at the time, Joseph Medill, who ran the Chicago Tribune.
Course,
yeah.
Of course. And you know, they built the wigwam, which is over near Wolf Point.
Mm-hmm.
They built that very quickly, and it was used for that convention. and then it burnt down in 1869. But the point was, at its most critical stage, when delegates showed up to show their badges and go in, their seats were already taken because Wentworth had filled the wigwam with phony delegates.
I know.
And they were all voting for Lincoln. So, you know, there's a question about, you know, what's more important, power or efficiency? And I think it's really the marriage of those two things. Because, you know, the old talk says, you know, everybody wants to rule the world.
Sure.
But if you're blind to efficiency, all the power in the world is not going to help you, you know?
Tom, if you're listening to Tom O'Gorman, you obviously have a sense of his astonishing and deep historical knowledge. He, along with R. Craig Sauter and Edward Burke, wrote what I think is certainly beyond the definitive book about political conventions. Certainly in this town called Inside the Wigwam. How did that book, what's the seed of that book, Tom? I'm very curious. I know I've talked to Ed some.
It really was, you know, we were getting the convention in 1996, the Democrats.
Yeah.
And Ed Burke, who himself is a really fine
historian
and a reader, he knows everything. I hadn't come to work yet. I started, this is back in 94, 93,
mm-hmm.
And R. Craig Sauter was a professor at Loyola, and he's a really nice guy and a brilliant guy, and he had already been working on it, and so I came in with my team in our office and took over certain sections of the book. And then we got it done. And Neil Samors.
Oh, sure.
Neil was at your station.
Oh.
And Neil was the editor and the publisher, really. And so that really got off the ground. What I thought was really good about it was that many states' delegations put it in the gift bag.
Oh, interesting.
And I thought, well, you know, finally, some real history is getting out there, because I really believe that that all the conventions we've had from 1860 till now,
mm-hmm.
they're very evolutive. They are affected by so many things. They are affected by culture.
Sure.
They are affected by politics, of course, but they're also affected by emotion and the economy. And so many different things, and inventions. I mean, the people that showed up at the wigwam, you know, were they didn't have a great deal of ease with some things. And when you look at, like, even in 1952-56 with the Stevenson conventions, there was television.
Yeah.
There was radio at them. And then moving on into later conventions, They were refined by the evolution of technology and history, of course.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, one thing I want to ask you about Tom O'Gorman. Yeah. We're talking to Tom O'Gorman of the Inside Publications, two of the best columns. Every one of his columns every week is filled with information, but these two that concentrate on the convention are really, really something. Wildly, wonderfully opinionated, too, Tom, if I do say so myself, especially this last one. Delegate's Guide to Chicago will have people roaring, I think.
I won't be invited to the mayor's house for dinner, I think.
No, you will not. No, you will not. You may be invited to his beauty parlor on the south side, but who knows? You know, the thing about 96 that always strikes me, and I think it's been brought up here and there, is that was the chance for 1968, the convention in 68 that I was sort of a small part of, really sullied the image of Chicago as a convention town, not just for political conventions, but in general. And 96 was meant to kind of rid the city of that cloud, and it did so, didn't it?
I think that it did. Two things. I wasn't on the floor of the convention in 68.
Yeah.
But I had gotten a group of I was between freshman and sophomore year in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten a pretty refined group of my classmates together, and we were working in the host committee in the Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember I had a brand new navy blue wide pinstripe suit. It was fantastic. and we met a lot of people. I met Martin Luther King's family. I met all the people in the thing. However, there were so many forces at work.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of us who had really worked our tails off for Bobby Kennedy. And I think, to me, the death of Bobby Kennedy was a cataclysmic historical event.
No question.
And then the Vietnam War had expanded. LBJ was deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
Gene McCarthy, who I did admire, Gene McCarthy wasn't a Robert Kennedy.
Correct.
Hubert Humphrey
was not a Robert Kennedy either.
A very old-fashioned, politician. And, I remember, this is just an interesting thing that just dawned on me. Years later, back in 96 or 95, I did a feature. I was the managing editor of the World of Hibernia magazine. Very mm-hmm. fancy. And Irish issues and stuff. And we were doing a thing on Irish American women. And we started out splitting 100, and then I wound up taking 75, and the other writer did 25.
Mm-hmm.
But among the people that I had, Sally Quinn in Washington.
Oh, sure.
Abigail Quigley McCarthy.
Mm.
And I spent about 2-3 hours with her, and we reflected back on the convention. And she really startled me. She said, "Tom," at one point she said, "I was certain they were going to kill my family."
Oh, wow.
And she said, "Gene spoke to the Secret Service," and she said, "they told me to go get the children and meet them by the elevator." She said, "I went in and told them we were going to play a game, we were going to go traveling on a jet, and we would not have change our pajamas."
Wow.
And she said the Secret Service carried them down in the elevator.
Boy, that's chilling. That's chilling.
It really was. And she was, even then, she was a grand lady.
Yeah.
Even then, she was, I could hear the heartache that she had gone through.
Of course.
And asked, is this worth it, And then I remember how we walked down the street, 2-3 blocks, with everybody on the other side of the mm-hmm. park.
Sure.
And we sort of backed into a big doorway on Michigan Avenue. And after a while, I turned around and I looked, and it was Peter Yarrow and Mary Travis.
Peter Paul and Mary. Yeah.
And we spent some time talking about it all, and suddenly people started screaming, saying, The police are moving on them, and it could have been the reverse.
Yeah, I was.
But in that instance,
I was there too.
We all turned around and ran down Wabash back to the Hilton.
Yep.
And I'm not kidding you when I say everybody was only 10 inches from a swinging club.
No question.
And,
no question.
By the time we got back to the Hilton, the lobby was you couldn't even see. It was all tear gas.
Yep. I remember distinctly.
And,
we're talking.
It was a very sensory experience.
And
I saw Hubert Humphrey and I saw McCarthy.
Yep.
And they were with the Secret Service and they were trying to make some decisions.
It was quite a time.
It really was. But it wasn't only there. And I know people get mad at old Mayor Daley, and he was trying to keep it all down.
Well, look, when you remember too, Tom, that, Daley, as much as he was vilified in some quarters, he won his next two elections by bigger margins than ever. We got to take a short break and then come back in a few minutes and ask you what the scoop secret is. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Tom O'Gorman.
Sure.
Welcome back. Artist, writer, man about town, Thomas O'Gorman, writes for Inside Publications. It's nice. I live in an area where I can pick up the hard copy of this, but you others can go to insideonline.com and you'll find Tom. He has written two. Every week, he's got a wonderful column that keeps tabs on social and political and every other kind of going on in Chicago. Got some big news, don't you, Tom? As your friend, our mutual friend Candace Jordan said, Tom's got a scoop. Okay, what's the scoop?
Well, two things. I remember one day last week, early in the week, there was I heard or saw that there had been a fire in the Soho House, the hotel.
Sure, yeah, it was this week.
It was a rehabbed big industrial building near Greektown.
Yeah.
And it's quite nice. It's got a great dining room and blah, blah, blah. But then it said, well, it wasn't actually, everybody was evacuated safely, but it wasn't in the hotel building. It was at a electrical transformer down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fire department and the police department determined that it was very suspicious origins. And they reported that to the Secret Service because it was in the footprint of the DNC.
Sure.
And the first thing that happened is that story was pulled from everything.
Yeah, I had heard that same thing. That's really...
Yeah. And I think people I've talked to said they thought it was like a test run.
Interesting. Wow. Scary.
Yeah.
Listen, you've written a speech for someone, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Actually, it's really funny. After the fact, you know, whenever I write, or all those years I wrote in City Hall.
Sure.
When I'm doing the task of the writing,
mm-hmm.
Everything else is cut out of me.
Sure.
So it's like I'm not juiced up about stuff. But once that task is over,
mm-hmm.
then I can kind of enjoy it. And so oh my God, I just had a warfarin moment. But anyway, I friends from Chicago. Had the wife, it was, you know, Mark O'Malley,
mm-hmm.
Of the famous O'Malleys, and then his wife, Patricia Tracy, the concert violinist. She's wonderful. She is from Dundalk, outside of Dundalk, Soft Stone, I think it's called. And her family, for the last century, have owned a huge dairy farm, very prosperous and productive. And, they were going to celebrate yesterday the centennial, and Mark and she were flying back to Ireland for the celebration. And Mark and Hunter Biden were our best friends. They were roommates, all these things. And Mark kind of grew up in the Biden household. He goes there for holidays and dinners and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and he's at the White House quite a bit. And, Biden said to them, you know, I want something read at Patricia's family celebration, telling them how important this is. And his great-great-grandfather was a man known as Finnegan the Blind Fiddler. And he was right from that area. And he and his two brothers immigrated to New York. He was already famous in Ireland as a fiddler, and he became a world-class fiddler up and down the saloons of New York.
Wow.
On First Avenue. But anyway, long story short, I said to them, are you asking me to write for the president?
Mm-hmm.
They said, yeah. They said he would really appreciate it if you would put some words together, and we'll get it to the White House. And so I did it, and I was really...
That's a great.
I was really touched by it, and then they actually had it blown up like 4 feet by 5 feet.
Oh, that's
it was mounted, but they called me this morning. They're still in Dublin. They're coming back tomorrow, and Patricia said there wasn't a dry eye in the house.
Oh, Tom, that's wonderful.
So anyway, I was really touched.
And wow,
I told. I somehow Candace found out about it, but I told her that I It was my West Wing moment.
Tom O'Gorman, it is an ongoing pleasure to know you, and it's a really an ongoing pleasure to read
you. Thank you so much. I love doing your show all the time, and it's great conversation.
Well, and you can read Tom. Try to find a hard copy, but you can read him also on InsideOnline.com. Keep it up. Have a good, interesting week, Mr. O'Gorman.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you
right.
so much.
Take care of yourself.
Bye.
Take care of yourself. My pleasure.
I will.